Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast by the Takshashila Institution. We are a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like bringing fresh perspectives to Indian affairs and Indian perspectives to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hello and welcome to today's episode of All Things Policy. I'm here with Bharat Reddy to speak about Digi Yatra and the various controversies surrounding it. Now, most of us who have caught a flight in Bangalore, Cochin, Delhi, Mumbai, and some of the metros would have experienced this. We've gone to the airport, you know, there's a small elite-looking queue, but you're not allowed there. It says Digi Yatra users only. And when you ask to get in, you're cast away into the distance, into one small gate, very far away, saying, you know, for people who are not part of Digi Yatra, you have to use that gate. So there's this clear kind of distinction being made in most of the big airports between Digi Yatra users and non-Digi Yatra users, which has irked many. You're almost tempted because the Digi Yatra line seems slightly smaller. It feels like you can get in quicker, so you're maybe tempted to do it. But if you're conscious and if you've thought about data and privacy and any of those issues, then you perhaps would have stopped yourself. So that's the lay of the land. Now, something interesting happened with Digi Yatra. And Bharat, here to speak about latest developments in the Digi Yatra episode.
Thanks, Anupam, for the introduction. So, just some context before we get into what happened. So, Digi Yatra, as you mentioned, is a biometric boarding system launched in 2017 by the Ministry of Civil Aviation. It was implemented in 2022 at 13 airports, some of them you just mentioned. So, what happened recently, a month ago actually, is that Digi Yatra Foundation, the company, the private Section 8 company, non-profit company that's managing Digi Yatra, asked users on Twitter saying that they need to uninstall the old app and install a new one. Now, the reason they said that the users had to do this was because they have plans to expand the user base, also take on international boarding and all of these new features, including hotel check-ins. So, to accommodate all of these things, they said that users have to uninstall the old one and install this new app. So all of this was done on Twitter. There was no communication to the users themselves. So a lot of people went to the airport and realized that they had to uninstall this app, download a new one, and all of these things, which they were not prepared for. Now, aside from all of this inconvenience, there's a lot of concerns about what this means for users themselves, the privacy that's this thing, and what happened that made Digi Yatra actually want to move to this app.
So, Bharat, let me get this clear. I mean, you've obviously been on your mobile for quite some time. You've been downloading apps, etc. How often is it that when there is some sort of features update, do they ask you to uninstall that app and install a new version of it? As against, you know, generally offering an update where you go into the Play Store and you just say, okay, update this app, right?
Right.
That's what happens normally, as what I've seen. So here they've clearly asked to uninstall one app and then install another one, right? That itself should have set off some kind of alarm bells.
Right. So the normal process, if there's any feature update or something, is that you update the app. So either that happens automatically or you might be prompted for accepting this updated version of the app. So this might involve new permissions, it might involve new features and all of these things. But what happened with Digi Yatra is that they asked you to uninstall it and install a new one. So the entity that was maintaining the old app was a company called Data Evolve. Now, Data Evolve, what wasn't mentioned as part of this communication was that Data Evolve is a one-person company that was, and this one person was involved in, what do you call it?
A scam, a scandal.
A scam that was recently uncovered in Andhra. So this company, Data Evolve, was managing the challan system for traffic violations. And very conveniently, they have redirected some of the payments to their own accounts.
Oh, fantastic.
And the money received over there was used to make the payments for cloud computing services that they were procuring. So all of this was going on. And all this while that they were running this scam for around 4 years, they made around 35 crores is what they have received through these, you know, payments that were redirected to their accounts. Now, this same company is also managing the payments, I mean, the Digi Yatra, which is the biometric facial recognition system, which lakhs of users are using every day going through airports. And so how do you trust a company that's doing this to also manage biometric, sensitive biometric information, personal details, all of these other things of so many users.
Right. So let me get this straight. So there is the DigiYatra as such, the app that we use is run by the DigiYatra Foundation.
Right.
The DigiYatra Foundation itself is a private, not-for-profit company. It is not government, right? So it's a private, not-for-profit company that is itself owned by, I think, the airports, five airports together, along with, I think, even Airport Authority of India has a stake, 26% stake, but most of it is owned by private airports. Those airports itself is owned by sometimes a consortium, sometimes very directly. So Bangalore Airport is a consortium, whereas I think, you know, Mumbai and Delhi is GMR, something else is, Mumbai is Adani and some, whatever, right? So there's Adani, there's GMR, there's sometimes a consortium, etc. Now, they own the DigiYatra Foundation, which runs the DigiYatra app. Yeah. Now, DigiYatra app itself is run on something called Data Evolve for all the backend technological work, right? I mean, if I have to put it very simply. And this Data Evolve, you're saying, is a one-person company, and that it has been involved in a scam, if I'm not mistaken, from 2018 to 2023. And this period is important because the scam runs for longer than what DigiYatra has been running. As in, to put it another way, when Data Evolve was given the contract to do this, to set up the backend for DigiYatra, they were already involved in the scam. And there was some, at least there was some kind of doubts about its functioning, doubts about its existence, etc., right? Or at least what we can say is that there's been very clearly lapses in due diligence. Now, who's involved in all of this? There's actually, if I recall correctly, the entire process of how Data Evolve came about was that Niti Aayog was involved, which is like the government think tank. But again, is it private? Is it public? Is it who owns it? We have no clue, right? But it is a government of India kind of think tank. And so they were involved in handing out the contract. So they were supposed to do the due diligence. But I don't think Niti Aayog necessarily comes under the purview of any kind of accountability mechanisms. And we'll come to that accountability part later. So Niti Aayog is involved in giving this contract. They've not done the due diligence. They've chosen Data Evolve. Data Evolve sets this up, etc. Now, the real scary thing, Bharat, which I want you to focus on, mm-hmm. is the fact that who completely now owns the data of, you know, the DigiYatra experience. So when, let's say a user walks up, they use their face as their ID, as they, you know, normally tout. So you use the face as the ID, that face, that biometric information is stored somewhere. It has also all your boarding pass details, right? Where you're going to, what time is your flight, and a whole bunch of other things. Maybe even down to your meal preferences if you've signed up for it. But nonetheless, right, it has all of its data. Now, there was a little bit of a stinker about this, saying, you know, the DigiYatra Foundation is a private company, who owns this, etc. And especially about data and data leaks, which are potential data leaks. And I remember, you know, the government officials and DigiYatra founder, etc., kept saying, no, we don't store this data. We very clearly, you know, this it's deleted after 24 hours. It's stored in a private wallet of the individual, right, who's using it. And then we don't necessarily store it. So there's no concerns with it. Mm-hmm. But it has now evolved that that is not necessarily the case. And excuse my pun on using evolved. Yeah.
So just adding a bit of more context to what you just said, right? So they were involved in these alleged activities related to the scam during the time that they were given the contract to do this. But that scam wasn't uncovered at that time. So maybe a due diligence would have helped, but that's something that was not done as when they were awarded the contract. So that's giving it to a one-person company is probably not the best idea when you're building infrastructure that's going to serve the, you know, population scale.
Exactly, right? At the scale. So there are 3.3 million users of DigiYatra, and of course, they plan to scale it up to much greater heights. So any entity that's going to be dealing with the data of millions of Indians, right, there should have been a much greater scrutiny, right? I mean, yeah. So even if that scam was not uncovered, in fact, that is when it should have been uncovered.
Right. And so this was actually awarded to them as part of a startup challenge that Niti Aayog conducted to give out this contract. And I guess they won the startup challenge and they got the contract because of that. So anyway,
maybe they used the money from the traffic challenge to win the startup challenge.
I don't know about that. So now coming back to the question of how the data is being used. So the Ministry of Civil Aviation, DigiYatra Foundation, they say that there is no user data or biometric data that's stored on any central server. It's all in your wallet, like you said. But then a lot of concerns have been raised about how the permissions that this app asks and the consent, their data policy, all of these things that are there. So one is it asks for a lot more permissions than it needs to do its job. It might be your personal information, read-write access to your drive on the phone.
Contact, the whole bunch of things, right? Phone calls, contacts.
There's no concept of data minimization.
Yeah.
And a lot of these, a lot of the data that's being used by DigiAtha is also saved on some Amazon server, which is owned by Datayable, not by the DigiAtha Foundation. So there is no transparency about what data is actually stored on those servers. So even if there are statements like this that we don't save any data or there's very minimal data, nothing is saved on the service, you don't know because it is not transparent. There's no independent audit. There's nothing of that sort that gives you that confidence. There have been audits that have been conducted, but those have not been released to the public. So you don't know unless there is some accountability or transparency brought in.
Two, I think, smoking guns, right? And you can elaborate on these. Two smoking guns. One, I think that, you know, the domain name, which came out that they were from the very beginning, the domain name that they were using was in.dataevolve.digiatra, which, you know, again, points to the fact that the data was stored in Datayable and not necessarily with DigiAtha Foundation, right? And so you have Datayable, which is a third-party kind of vendor, and I can imagine of no circumstance where the vendor gets to store all the data of, well, you know, of your client, right? That seems to be a very bizarre kind of setup, right? So what that means is, I mean, for all practical purpose, Datayable could have extracted as much data using APIs, done whatever with it, with no repercussions, no stoppages, and there's no one to question them because it's being stored in their kind of servers, right? So that's the first aspect, and you're far better equipped to comment on this. The second smoking gun is their own privacy policy. So the DigiAtha Foundation privacy policy says that it might share sensitive personal information with third parties if the need arises. So how can you share that information with third parties unless you store it, right? So the fact that it says that we might share it means that there is a database and that database exists. And here's where, you know, the two things kind of link up. If that database exists, it doesn't exist with DigiAtha Foundation, but it exists with Datayable.
Right. So again, on what data, I mean, it's stored, like the domain name that you mentioned. So it's stored on Datayable servers and not DigiAtha. And there's clearly something that's not right here, right? So a vendor is being given access to all of these data. You don't know what data there is. Maybe there isn't any data. Maybe there's they have access to a lot of data. And given the kind of history that this company has, you don't know for sure. And it's not someone you would trust. Now, when the new app was introduced, they have made some changes to the server that this is stored on and all of those things. But again, you don't know what data at all they're collecting and how they're using it. And there are, again, a lot of risks related to the... So that we have a data protection legislation, which was enacted last year, but it's not been enforced. So you don't have a legislation, you don't have the subordinate rules and all that which are in place, which will give it legal enforceability. So even though they say that these are the actions that they're taking, you can't really hold them accountable if they violate those things. So that's one thing. And on their data policy, like you mentioned, they say that they can share it with other government agencies and for security agencies, for other government agencies. And they also say that they have the ability to change the data per settings based on security requirements on a need basis. So these are all very vague and subject to change kind of things which don't give a lot of confidence, right, when you're giving a lot of your information to.
And can we add a little bit more context to this? This is in the backdrop of a bunch of data leaks that have happened in allied kind of sectors, right? Whether it is the other data leaks that have happened on multiple occasions, there's been data leaks with UPI and NPCI and so on, right? So, I mean, there's been, and these are all extremely sensitive data that we're talking about. There's not random in that sense, maybe DigiAtha is slightly a lower kind of scale when there's been a breach of other database on more than one occasion, right? This does not inspire confidence. In fact, we should be scared and we should be scared irrespective of whether it is DigiAtha Foundation, which is again a private company, or a third-party private vendor, which is Datayable.
Right. So when you mention DigiAtha Foundation, which is a private company, and the way it is structured, there's not a lot of trust involved. So there's also this question of accountability. How do you hold, why is some entity which is managing such critical infrastructure, structured as a Section 8 company, which is not subject to any RTI disclosures, which is not accountable to the public. There are no grievance redressal mechanisms if some issues were to happen. And this is true of other digital public infrastructure as well, like the NPCI, for example, or the ONDC, which have a similar kind of a structure. Yeah. So this is, again, another concern which probably needs addressing in some form.
Correct. Absolutely. I mean, this has been my gripe for the longest time, right? I mean, I've been yelling from rooftops and most of my neighbors think I'm a madman because of that. But, you know, you have, there seems to be, Bharat, I'm trying to see a pattern here, right? There seems to be a pattern evolving, which is that you are increasingly having these opaque institutions being built, which are getting the authority from the government, right? So there is kind of public authority present, right? But private accountability. And for me, that's a very scary scenario. So if you look at DigiYatra, who are the people who are enforcing it? CISF, right? Airports Authority of India, CISF, the entire Civil Aviation Ministry, all of them are putting their weight behind it.
And
right?
Getting users to enroll even without a proper consent mechanism. Sometimes
exactly.
They don't know that they have...
Yeah, we'll come to that, right? Yeah. It's very scary. But so we are now seeing a situation where the authority is coming from all of this, which is why people say, oh, you know, it must be a government thing, so it's okay. Let me give my data. I don't know how many people within India actually know that DigiYatra is a private company. I mean, and it's a private enterprise because it's being enforced by all... you know, uniformed officers. There, it's being enforced by the ministry. It's being endorsed by the government. It's being endorsed by the prime minister. I'm sure we can find some poster where Modi is saying, yeah, please use DigiYatra, right? So they're putting the heft behind it. So it might seem like this. And again, there is a lot of precedent for this. Right, NPCI, the entire UPI system and infrastructure was exactly the same thing. Though NPCI, again, I don't know, I mean, again, I've said this many times, but NPCI is a private not-for-profit company, which is owned by a consortium of banks, right? And so UPI is not a government initiative. It's not a government enterprise, right? It is a private enterprise. And I have no problems with private enterprise, don't get me wrong. Mm. But it's just that people should know where that accountability lies.
And there's no competition.
It's a monopoly. ONDC, again. Right? It's not a government thing. So, but it's all of them are touted as government things. And when you have, as I've said, you know, when you have had the front page of newspapers with our prime minister saying, please use Beam UPI, people will be forced to believe that that is a government initiative. Right? Similarly, if you remember, I mean, you know, in the budget speech of the late Arun Jaitley, he said, yeah, we're going to give subsidies for people who use NPCI products, which is Beam UPI. But all of this is very, very, you know, it's highly improper because you're straddling along the lines of what is public and private. You know, you're jumping across so many times across the line that you don't know really where that line is anymore, right? So I think these are really innovative, but in a horrible way, innovative mechanisms of setting up your infrastructure. So your DigiYatra is exactly like that, right? So it has the heft of the government, but has zero accountability because it doesn't come under, for example, the RTI Act, right? You can't ask. And so Nikhil Pawar, our good friend Nikhil Pawar from Medianama, had filed a couple of RTIs with them saying, you know, we want to know where this data is stored, how much data is there, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, how many people are enrolled. And there is a very clear response. I mean, if any of you are interested, go to Nikhil's at Nixon on Twitter. You can look at his timeline where you get that RTI response as well. They clearly say, sorry, this is a private company, so therefore it's not part of RTI, right? And so that is just the accountability. You can't get information from them. But similarly, there's no grievance redressal. If something wrong happens, if your data is, I mean, let's say a news story comes out that your data is breached, who do you go after? You can't, right? There's no accountability in that sense as well. So I think all of this is kind of scary, and this is this thing emerging. So we spoke about UPI, we spoke about now DigiYatra, there is our favorite ONDC as well. And then there is the other big one, which is PMKS, right? Now PMKS is not an enterprise per se, but it kind of operates in a similar way, which is that the name has PM in it. One would be forced to believe that it has got something to do with the constitutional post of a prime minister, which means that it's a government-backed thing, right? But it's not. It's extra-constitutional, right? And that had the same problem. It's not subject to RTI, right? PM case is not subject to RTI. So that was another entirely problematic thing. So I think there is this pattern evolving. Now, what are the dangers, Bharat? What are the dangers of this? You can see that one of the biggest dangers is that, I mean, as we spoke about, the lack of accountability, but there can also be completely arbitrary decision-making. You can imagine a scenario where what happened with NPCI and their UPI, this thing, right? Where they said no company can hold more than 33% of market share. That was a completely arbitrary decision taken by a private company on a very serious critical infrastructure for the country, right? Which is payments. So how can you allow for private companies to make rules and regulations on critical infrastructure? For me, that is the damning thing. I mean, tomorrow you can very clearly, I mean, this has happened with Aadhaar. This has happened with Aadhaar so many times, right? Random exclusion errors, inclusion errors. Now imagine DigiYatra, you're flying, there can be exclusion errors, right? And they say, sorry, only people with Aadhaar can fly. Very clearly, you can imagine a scenario such as that. And Aadhaar is supposed to be non-mandatory, right? The Supreme Court says so. And yet they can say, okay, only people with Aadhaar can fly. And, you know, you can, like they did with FASTag, you can imagine a scenario where there will be no lines left at all for people without DigiYatra. Given how forceful this government can be, right, they can make rules saying DigiYatra is mandatory and compulsory.
Or so, make it very inconvenient to you.
Or make it extremely inconvenient, right? Mm-hmm. So have just one gate, you know, have 20 gates for DigiYatra and one gate for non-DigiYatra. And that can be spilling over, right? So those are the kind of forceful tactics they've used before. FASTag is an example. Aadhaar is an example where, you know, life without Aadhaar is very, very difficult in India. And they've done that, right? So they can do the same thing with DigiYatra. And so you have this nexus between, and I don't use the word nexus very lightly, but there's a nexus between, you know, government officials, government ministries, and a completely private company, which is making rules for millions and billions of Indians without due process, accountability mechanisms, and so on. So for me, that is the really scary part. We can go into the enforcement thing as well.
Before we get into enforcement, so a distinct thing about DigiYatra compared to the other examples that we spoke about is that this is based on face recognition technology, which has a lot of other use cases. It can be used for surveillance. A lot of the data that's being collected, you're giving your face so that you can enter an airport. But can you be 100% sure that it's not being used to train anything else, that it's not being, that database is not being used for something else? So when you say that you're going to share with other government agencies for security purposes or anything like that, you need 100% trust when you're building out such systems. And such systems are also not completely accurate. So there might be some biases, there might be some exclusions. So some segments of people, maybe if I have a beard and I grow my beard a little longer and I'm not allowed into the airport because, you know, it doesn't recognize my face. So how do you...
Or at the rate at which you're losing your hair, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it might not recognize you anymore.
Exactly. So how do you, you know, this is also a kind of technology where some of these other concerns about surveillance and all of these come into the picture, and which is why there's been a lot of pushback from civil society groups about this particular example, at least, this particular technology, at least. So now, maybe we can look at, so we've been talking and saying there's a lot of problems with how it's been implemented. So what can some solutions be? So if I, as a user, I'm giving my data to you, which is the government, and you're doing it, you're implementing some kind of infrastructure which makes my life easier. How do you take that responsibility? How do you ensure that there's transparency or accountability in the way you operate? So we're saying there's a problem with the way it's being done currently.
Yeah.
If you were to do it differently, what would that look like?
You're going to put me on the spot, Bharat. So I would first start with, okay, if it is implemented in the way that you should, which is that, you know, don't enforce it on people. My first thing is don't make it mandatory or don't enforce it on people, right? So back to that idea that you've had hundreds of cases of people reporting on social media or people reporting somewhere else where they've been duped into getting onto DigiYatra, right? One is, as I said, you know, as we spoke about the forced mechanisms, right? Where there's a lot more gates for DigiYatra than non-DigiYatra. So, you know, you're making that thing. But in many other cases, they just, like, literally, you have government agents, which is CISF, who are actively involved in duping people. For me, that's a very scary.
And maybe they don't know either.
Maybe they don't know either, but yeah, they just say, you know, download this app and I'll just take a photo and so on. And they're making a lot of people download and get into this without really this thing, right? And again, the allied kind of duping is the fact that most people believe that this is a government thing because of all the things that we spoke about. So that is happening. Our friend, our friend and good colleague Manoj, who's, I mean, you can imagine, a think tank researcher who spent half his time talking about surveillance in China, was duped into signing on to DigiYatra, right?
So, not duped, but didn't have the time or the effort, patience to put up a fight.
Put up a fight. Because you're, and this is typically what happens. You're running late for a fight. Somebody says, this is the only way, you have to give in, right? And your choices are miss that flight and then go through that massive hassle of rebooking, or, you know, so that you can fight with the officials who are, again, not going to listen to you. Or you just give in and say, okay, forget it. Let me just sign up, right? And so there's a lot of people who do that as well, just out of desperation, just so that they can go and catch their flights. So that, you know, those are not good scenarios.
Optional is one.
Make it entirely optional if you have it at all. Second, I see no reason why this should be with a private company. This is one of those things that should be with the majority stake or a major stake should be with the government, because you're handling such sensitive data. And just because they should be subject to all the checks and balances that government agencies face. You can't wish these things away, right? So it's the exact same thing. What the justification given for something like PM CARES is, oh, no, you know, Prime Minister's relief fund is too bureaucratic. And, you know, it takes delays. And so therefore, we built this new thing just so that we could spend. But yeah, we don't know where you spent that money on. We don't know what you spend that money on. You know, there's no answers to that. There's no clarity for that. So that can't be, you know, getting rid of bureaucratic hurdles cannot be the justification for building completely opaque systems and opaque things. You can try and ease that bureaucratic process so that it's easier for everybody, but don't go around it, right? So there's a reason why there are checks and balances, and those are, it's important to maintain them. So I think that is important to subject them to this thing, right? And crucially, this is where, again, you'll come in, but your Data Protection Act crucially misses out on government collecting your data, right? And balances around that. So one, I think you need to expand that, but I don't know how this operates, because DigiYatra, even though it's a private company, is still not subject to this, right? So I don't know how do you straddle that.
That's not something that's in that, I mean, I'm able to wrap my head around. But yeah, all of these things, and I guess you need more accountability, especially when you're building such infrastructure, which is in a way adding to your convenience, making life, at least is saying, claiming to make life easier, but at what cost, right? So you, if it's at the cost of your privacy, maybe the cost of your data being sold to somebody and some organization which is profiting from it, there's no accountability, there's no transparency in how your data is being used. And if there are no checks and balances, you don't know where, it's a slippery slope, and you don't know where, you know, what else it would lead to. So especially when you're building out such infrastructure, there are a lot of other things also that the government is doing with the digital public infrastructure. So when you have such concerns being raised against one such implementation, it'll also reduce trust in all of the other things which might be working.
Correct.
Right. So, and you're talking about taking this infrastructure to other countries, exporting it, and you need to create an example for good governance also, not just the technical infrastructure itself.
Absolutely. I think the technical infrastructure is replicable, comparatively easier to do, right? But building that good governance and accountability mechanisms around that is far more difficult to achieve. And that is what you should be focusing your energies on. And this is typical, right? When somebody brings this out saying, okay, there's something called data evolve, it's a, the standard, I mean, I understand this from a government perspective, but the standard response is always trying to hush it up, trying to create some other kind of stories around it, do a narrative battle instead of saying, yeah, okay, this is wrong. Let's try and fix this, right? That's not your first response. The first response is to hush things up. Even the way that the new app was launched, it was not done in a right manner, right? It was all too secretive. It was hushed. It was just said, oh yeah, we're doing it for something else, etc. No, you got to own up for your mistakes. That's also how you build trust, right? Saying, yeah, okay, this was wrong, but now we're building this, and now give assurances of how this will be better, right? How, let's say, DigiYatra 2.0 will be better. I doubt it, by the way. I doubt it, because I inherently do not trust biometrics being collected by a private agency which has no accountability mechanisms. But for whatever it's worth, they should try and say, okay, we've built in these checks and balances.
Right. So anyway, so just some information of how this news came out. So a cybersecurity researcher broke this news on Twitter when DigiYatra Foundation announced that they were changing apps. So that was then led to a lot of an investigative report by the Ken, by this reporter, Ronak.
Yeah.
And so that's what got us talking about this. And
yeah, that is a great report, folks. I mean, we'll also link it in the show notes, but do check that out. That's where, I mean, all the information that we discussed today is from that report. Primarily, and then we've added some bit of very low value analysis.
But so yeah, we hope you enjoyed listening to this, and do check out our other podcasts if you enjoy these kind of things, and have a nice day.
If you liked our show, dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs. Check us out at our Twitter handle at takshashilainst or our website takshashila.org.in.